up on this week's show, another huge Nintendo franchise is coming to the big screen.
A mini PC aimed at retro games.
And we get nostalgic about 90s gaming magazines with Paul Monahan.
And the Retro Hour podcast is brought to you every Friday with our incredible friends at Bitmap Books. Now, have you seen? This is one of the best books they've done in ages. I'm Too Young to Die, The Ultimate Guide to First-Person Shooters, detailing over 180 classic FPS games running from 1992 to 2002 across every platform you could think of. So if you're a fan of FPSs, you need to check out this book and the rest of their retro gaming collection at bitmapbooks.com. And welcome to the Retro Hour podcast, episode number 404, your weekly dose of retro gaming and technology news with me, Dan Wood.
Me, Ravi Abbott.
And me, Joe Fox.
And a very warm welcome to the podcast that, of course, every single Friday just takes you on a nostalgic trip back to the classic age of video games, brings you up to speed on all the big happenings from over the last week, and of course brings you a very special guest in the second half of the show. That's the thing about us, guys. You can't stop us talking about retro games. We're obsessed, aren't we?
I think we live and breathe retro games, yeah. And it's quite interesting actually, because of I've just taken on somebody new at work, and he is obsessed with Resident Evil, and like he found out about my podcast, and he really wants to talk to me about it at work. But like, I've been in loads of meetings since I've got him, and it's just like we both keep seeing each other and like spitting feathers, like Resident Evil retro games.
You just need to start dropping names in the middle of meetings, like Resident Evil references.
Yeah, but we truly do live and breathe retro games, retro tech, retro computers, the three of us, don't we?
Absolutely. Oh, that's actually one of the chapters in our book, isn't it? Our new book that is getting into Kickstarter backers' hands at the moment and is currently with the printers. There's a lot of the PDFs out there now as well. That's the thing. I mean, we just love doing this podcast now, over 400 episodes of it. I think that's the thing about doing a show like this. If you didn't love the subject matter, there's no way you could keep going this long, is there?
No, so, not at all. Yeah. And like, we've just been doing some changes as well. Like 404 is one of the errors that I've been seeing on the website.
You know, I was going to make some pun on that in the intro then.
Yeah, I've been updating it. So there's a new look to the website, but it's still got all the kind of same content on it. And we're going to be populating the pages soon, which has been really good fun, actually, trying to modernize it a bit.
And Ravi, you've got a big announcement as well, because I know a lot of people really enjoyed your Amiga event that you did in the summer this year, back in July in Nottingham, Kickstarter 01. It was the first Kickstarter event that you did, and the first kind of high-profile Amiga show that we've had in the UK for almost a decade. And your big announcement is
that I'm going to be doing it again. So tickets or details won't be on sale until around, just after Christmas, because, you know, it's still quite a long time, and I've got other stuff, but the venue has been booked for the 29th and the 30th of June 2024. Right. So bang in the middle of the summer, and in Nottingham at the Notts County Stadium, Meadow Lane.
That's the thing. A lot of people I spoke to last year, because obviously it was your first one, and I went to a few like retro events, you know, around the continent, really. I went to one in Italy in particular. I was talking to the guys there, and they were like, oh, we didn't know it was on until, you know, after it had been on, then we saw about it on the internet and stuff like that. So I think a lot of people this year are going to be more prepared for it. So I think definitely get those dates in your calendar.
We've got a lot more time to repair, but also we've booked more of the building. So we've got a whole extra section upstairs, which is going to add 200 capacity, and it also means that we can do talks up there, and you know, we can expand the other areas as well. So yeah, it's just going to grow, and really looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I'm really pleased that you're doing it again, because I had such a blast at that last year. I mean, obviously I've been to quite a lot of Amiga events, you know, over in Germany and places like that, and I've got to say, I think it was equally as good as any of the other shows I've been to. So for your first one, I think you absolutely, you know, knocked it out of the park. And even, you know, your Pop Joe's Amiga show, Cherry, you know, you came along, didn't you? You've never been to an Amiga event before.
Came along, had my little booth. It was quite funny, because I brought a load of PS1 games, you know, and people were like, why you brought a load of PS1 games to sell? Walked away with them all sold. So yeah. But no, it was a really, really good event, and I really enjoyed the nightclub that we had afterwards. Kick some ass on Street Fighter.
Yeah, I'm hoping to drip some news out over time, but you know, we've got ages till it's going to happen. So it's going to be a lot more prepared, and there's a lot of surprises ahead as well.
Yeah, so let's get Christmas and everything out the way first. But there you go, something to look forward to in 2024, that huge Amiga event coming back to Nottingham. And Ravi will keep you posted on that. Now, we have got an incredible guest coming on today. And actually, there's a friend of ours who is very well known in the, not only, you know, the Amiga scene, on the Sega scene as well. Anyone that reads kind of retro magazines. Also, you know, the podcast sphere as well, because he launched his own podcast back in 2015 called Maximum Power Up, which he hasn't done an episode for a while, but definitely a really interesting archive of shows there as well that you'll definitely want to delve into. And somebody you work with actually on the magazines, don't you, Ravi? This is Paul Monahan.
Yeah, yeah, he often shouts at me to try and get me to you know, get a deadline in quickly. Paul is basically Mr. Retro Magazine. He you know, he hosts Maximum Power Up, and they've had probably the most magazine guests on any podcast, you know, talking about all the different types. I think Paul often sends me images of magazines and says, I've just bought all of these. I've got to hide them from the wife because he's got a, such a big collection, and he knows all about the obscure ones as well. And, you know, stuff that we weren't always reading, you know, we, a lot of us were stuck with our own systems and kind of prejudice in that way. Well, he went all over the whole gaming world and looked at it. And at the moment, he is the editor of Mega Addict and also a writer, staff writer for Sega Powered magazine as well.
And he works on Pixel Addict as well, doesn't he?
Yeah,
which, yeah. Another one from the same group that you guys work for. And that's the thing, I mean, because I've always been a big fan of retro magazines, and I've mentioned it loads of times on the show that, you know, I kind of got rid of all mine a few years ago, and I've kind of started buying them all back again now. And actually quite an accelerated rate recently. I've been buying loads of old Edge magazine issues in particular off the internet, and a retro gaming store in Derby that I go to. Some of those are getting quite expensive now, though. And Paul's also a massive fan of Edge, so definitely going to delve into, you know, just some of those legendary 90s titles.
Yeah, his knowledge is so deep, and a lot of it is about multi-system magazines as well. And, you know, CVG and stuff like GamesX and, you know, magazines I'd never really heard of. So it's great to have a chat with him. He is a real kind of knowledge base of magazines.
Yeah, so I could consider him a video game magazine historian. And of course, keeping the flame going with his work on new retro magazines as well. So our special guest, Paul Monahan, he'll be coming up in around 35 minutes from now. Now, let's get straight into the news this week, because there has been a very big story that dropped actually just after we recorded last week's show. So it was a bit too late to get into the news last week, but we need to talk about this. There is going to be another massive Nintendo franchise that is having a live action movie adaptation. This is The Legend of Zelda.
Yeah. You know, when I first saw this, I was like, oh, is this going to be, you know, like Illumination Studios, their Mario they've recently done, or is this going to be live action? Yeah. But yeah, this has been everywhere. It's going to be live action. And this isn't like, you know, this story's been doing the rounds for what, 15 years now? Like
the rumors
and stuff. Game trailers did that, like fake trailer. God, when was that? Like 2008 or something like that now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's always just been rumored there's going to be a Legend of Zelda movie at some point. But this has had an official press pack from Nintendo. This isn't like this is in the works. You know, this is a rumor going around Netflix or going around Hollywood or anything. Like, it's official. It's happening. The rumors are we're probably not going to get it until like 2025 because of it has just gone into pre-production. And obviously a film takes, you know, 2-3 years kind of to make. But yeah, big thing is obviously it is live action. Official press release from Nintendo. They have said Shigeru Miyamoto, the creator of Zelda, is going to be behind the film. He's going to be kind of like overseeing the whole project, which is fantastic.
Which is very reassuring, I think, isn't it? Yeah, because I mean, doing something like this, I mean, a franchise that is so beloved by, you know, not just Nintendo fans, I think just, you know, gamers in general to this day, you know, I think it could go very wrong if you didn't have the right people on board. Yeah. But knowing that he's kind of overseeing it, definitely should be good.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's more what kind of audience they're aiming at. Because for me, like, you know, Sonic and Mario, they're harder to do than Zelda. I think, you know, Zelda's a tale that works well adapting to screen. You know, it's something like Lord of the Rings to me. It's got its own world. And, you know, the Mario and Sonic ones just seem to be kind of aimed at kids and teenagers, where Zelda, I reckon you can go quite deep with that.
I'm inclined to completely agree with you there. So another thing that backs that up is the guys who they've got producing and directing this. So this has been announced as well. So the producer of the film is going to be Avi Arad, who was the producer of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, the Uncharted movie, Spider-Man No Way Home, Ghost in the Shell, and the Iron Man films. So that screams to me more along the lines of what you've just said, kind of like it will be kid friendly. It'll be like the Marvel films. Kids can watch it. Adults can enjoy it as well.
You know, but it might get deep like Dune or something. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So, and then the director is Wes Ball, who I've not heard of. He directed the Maze Runner films, which I know are kind of, I think they're more young adult, teenager films, kind of in the vein of Hunger Games and stuff. I've not seen them personally. So he's going to be directing it. But yeah, pretty huge for Nintendo, I would say.
Now, there is an article on Retro Dodo that I will link up in the show notes. There is a line in there that I imagine made your eye twitch a little bit, Joe. It said it took 25 years for them to make a Sonic the Hedgehog and Super Mario Brothers movie. obviously, forgetting your favourite film of all time, the 1993 Super Mario Brothers film. But, you know, we'll let them off that. But also, there's some kind of mock-ups, isn't there, a bit further down the article of kind of, you know, of Tom Holland, what he'd look like if he was Link. Because that is kind of, they put a little line at the end of this article. I've got $50 on Tom Holland being the main star of the film, just like the rumours suggested a year ago. And they've got Emma Watson, what she'd look like as Zelda.
I don't mind Tom Holland. I think I'm a bit Tom Holland out. Like, he's already got Spider-Man. Like, that's huge. He's
Daniel
Spider-Man.
Radcliffe.
No, Daniel Radcliffe's Harry Potter. I'm not saying people can't go and play other people, obviously. Like, I'm not saying that at all. But I just think, like, oh, I don't know. I can see this being huge. Do you know what I mean? But at the same time, I could see why the rumors are Tom Holland because of, with the producer being who it is, you know, Spider-Man straight away, Tom Holland. And then was Tom Holland in Uncharted as well?
Yes, he was.
I can see why you would put 50 quid on that completely.
Mm. I reckon it's going to be a live action version of the 3DO.
That'd be amazing.
Can you imagine? Wand of Gamelon.
Yeah.
Well, not many people have seen that story, so yeah, it could be a good starting point. But yeah, very good news, I think. And like you said, Ravi, I think it could be a great, like, epic fantasy movie. So I'm quite pleased to see that this is coming. And Sony Pictures and Nintendo are basically, Nintendo are 50% funding it as well. So, you know, with Miyamoto and Nintendo behind it, hopefully this will be a decent movie. So, like you said, I've got a couple of years to wait for it probably, but we'll keep you updated as we hear more. Now, I must admit, I wasn't too familiar with this company, but actually it seems like they're doing quite a lot of kind of retro-inspired mini PC systems, both ones that you can connect up to a monitor and a keyboard in your living room, and a handheld as well. And this is a company called Ayaneo, who've just announced a couple of quite cool-looking new products in the last week.
I've never heard of them as well. Actually, usually when we have these companies, even, you know, the ones with, like, different names and stuff that we've not heard of before. There's still a bit of familiarity with them. But here, yeah, I've never heard of Ayaneo.
Ayaneo, yeah.
Yeah, but this looks like a nice little device. It's kind of based on the Mac Classic.
Yeah, the look of it is quite similar to the Mac Classic. So this is, the first one we'll talk about is the Retro Mini PC AM01, which is quite interesting because stylistically, yeah, it does have like that kind of beige colour of the original Mac. There's a little rainbow logo on there as well. It's got a little smiley face. It kind of looks a bit like the Mac Finder face icon. And there's also what appears to be like a fake floppy drive on there. But there is a button. So, you know, whether that button actually does something, maybe it's a power button or a reset button or something like that. Apart from that, I mean, this appears to be a machine they're saying is aimed at retro gamers, but it is just pretty much an AMD Ryzen 7 and their Ryzen 3, one they offer as well, Windows 11 PC. So kind of a bit similar to something like an Intel NUC, like a mini PC.
Yeah, and I don't think you're going to need that much emulation power, you know, if you're doing a lot of the kind of classic stuff on here that it's aimed for. But, yeah, I think the Ryzen chips are really nice and they've got quite a good kick.
Well, there's some nice pictures on this article here on that link up as well, that their announcement from Ayaneo, basically showing it off paired with what appears to be like basically a retro-inspired Bluetooth controller. And there's a picture of a lady. Looks like she's playing a few 8-bit style games on it. And there's a couple of cartridges on a table next to her, which I've got a feeling you're not going to be able to put those kind of
Game Boy Advance
retro cartridges into.
Yeah, Game Boy Advance and Game Boy cartridge next to it.
Yeah, and I can't see any cartridge slots on this thing. No, so I presume they're just there for aesthetics. Yeah,
I think it's cool. Obviously, you know, I'm not massively tech guy in terms of emulation and stuff like that. It's something I definitely need to get into. But I can see what they're trying to do. So this is all part of one showcase. So they showcased off quite a few little, like, you know, gimmicky kind of gadgets and stuff. So as well as this, they also announced the SNES inspired retro power bank, which is obviously just a, you know, a power bank, but it's designed like a Super Nintendo, which is pretty cool. So we won't spend the next half an hour talking about that. But then they also did the Aeneo Flip, which is a handheld Windows PC, but it's designed like a DS.
Yeah, the Flip DS, they've actually called it.
Called it the Flip DS, yeah. So there's the
just getting a bit brave with their legal team.
So there's the Flip KB, which is got one screen and then it's got a keyboard and then it does have, controller, essentially. Looks a little bit like a GameCube controller built into the keyboard as a handheld.
A couple of analog sticks here.
A couple of analog sticks, yeah. And then the Flip DS doesn't have the keyboard, but has a second screen, just like a certain Nintendo console called a DS, funny enough. So they definitely know what they're doing. I think this whole range, 100% they are, there's no shame. This is for emulation.
Yeah, I think.
Go buy these kind of thing.
The Steam Link coming out has created a small market of these little, like, portable PCs. And, you're getting quite a bit of power in these smaller devices, and they're all being used for gaming or running Steam or, running your emulators on there as well. And it's pretty cool to see this kind of flip one. I like the idea of a full keyboard, but also like a touchpad if you're not really into that.
Yeah, because I think the keyboard on this, there's no kind of, I'm looking here to kind of get an idea of the size of it. They say it's going to be a 7-inch display for the main screen on the top, and then the DS version has a 3-inch screen where the keyboard would be.
It looks like
one.
A PDA keyboard, doesn't it? Like one of the old school PDAs,
Yeah, or very much like a DS screen. It doesn't really give you much information on kind of the specs of the screen. I imagine the top one's going to be a lot more high resolution than the that little 3-inch one they've got in there. In terms of specs on this one, another AMD Ryzen 7.
They're also saying that this dual screen setup is designed for DS, 3DS and Wii U titles as well. So I can imagine with the Wii U one, there's quite a powerful Wii U emulator out there at the moment. You'd have the gamepad display on the bottom section, and then on the top section, you'd have like the main screen.
That's cool, because I was thinking then what kind of use cases would there be for the dual screen, like a dual screen PC, like, in this kind of form factor. But yeah, I guess for emulating DS and 3D, well, it couldn't do 3DS, I guess. There's no 3D on it, but the Wii U games it could emulate.
Or Game & Watch.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of possibilities for it. But again, these are basically just like mini PCs, aren't they? But I think in terms of the power, I imagine, just kind of looking at the rough specs of this, probably more powerful than a Switch. The Switch is kind of a decade-old technology now, isn't it?
So yeah, yeah.
I think you should be able to
do Ryzen somewhere. 7, definitely.
Yeah, so no word on pricing yet, but they're apparently saying it's pretty much ready to go. So we could be getting it in early 2024, so it might be a couple of months away from the release of these. So it'll be interesting to hear on pricing, because I think that's obviously kind of a big factor, isn't it, with these kind of things. If they can get the price down so it's, just an impulse buy, then that could be something that's quite appealing to me if they're going to be selling them for like $500-600 quid.
As long as you don't get stung on customs.
Yeah, that's the thing, yeah. So if you want to check those out, I'll link up both of those stories in our show notes as well. Now, the Mega Drives have been getting a lot of love in the homebrew scene recently. And I've got to say, this could be one of the most impressive things I've ever seen running on a stock Mega Drive. This is footage of a homebrew port of Marvel Superheroes running on the Mega Drive with some massive sprites on this.
Yeah, this looks absolutely insane. If this is what they are saying it is, running on a absolutely standard, Sega Genesis, Sega Mega Drive, no trickery kind of thing, no like trickery in the cartridges and all this kind of stuff. Like this is absolutely unbelievable. So for those who don't know, Marvel Superheroes was the second in the kind of the long line of Capcom Marvel one-on-one fighters, the original being X-Men Children of the Atom. You then got Marvel Superheroes, which is this one. And then it went on to X-Men versus Street Fighter, and then Marvel Superheroes versus Street Fighter, and then eventually Marvel versus Capcom, which then kind of became the franchise staple. So this is the second one, which came out in 1995, and it came out on the Capcom S2 arcade hardware, which, to put it into perspective, games for that were ported to the PlayStation and the Sega Saturn and even the Dreamcast. So to have this running on the Mega Drive is just unbelievable. Like, the sprites in this, and just to kind of put it into kind of like proportion, the characters they've gone with are Hulk and Juggernaut, which are the two biggest sprites in the game. They are absolutely huge on the screen.
They're almost the height of the screen, pretty much, aren't they? It's got the hood above them.
Yeah, they're absolutely
I'd say
massive.
Maybe 3/4 the height of the screen, yeah.
It's only one scene that we're really seeing from this.
It
does look like it's run off an emulator as well. I don't know about the other one.
So to put it into, you know, kind of like, it is so far them just walking around on the screen and throwing a couple of punches at each other. The UI looks very basic. Like, the life bars don't seem to be doing anything. There's no round counters. We've not seen the menu. We've not seen any other characters. So right now it is proof of concept. But yeah, like, if we get this running, because of there has been other kind of like, if you want 32-bit games running on Super Nintendo and stuff, like official releases, like some of the Samurai Showdown games came out on the Mega Drive and the SNES, and even Street Fighter Alpha 2 came out on the Super Nintendo, but they were scaled back. Like, they were not quick games. They were pretty slow games. There were slow loading times on them. You know, the details in the sprites was reduced. The frames of animation was reduced. This looks like, I'm not an expert, I'm not going to say it looks spot on, it looks better than them games, put it that way. Like, this looks really, really good.
Yeah, I've seen some very impressive stuff that's started to hit the Mega Drive. Like, even back in the days, you know, they had a Titan doing some of the amazing demos. I remember one called Overdrive and stuff. And some of the stuff that you see in those, and the fact it's running on original hardware, is pretty amazing. So, you know, sprites this big, that's impressive. Yeah, let's hope it can all kind of come together as well.
Well, this is Gabriel Pyron is his name, and he's quite a well-known Mega Drive homebrew developer. He did like the did some work on Final Fight CD, did that patch for Outrun as well that made the Mega Drive version a lot more like the arcade. He did like a remastered edition of Street Fighter 2 Special Champion Edition as well. So he's definitely got his chops, if you like, in the Sega homebrew development scene. Actually, you said, Ravi, you mentioned about emulation then, that apparently this is running on real hardware.
Oh, wicked.
This clip we see here is running on stock Sega Genesis / Mega Drive hardware. So looks like, you know, that's the thing these days, because when we look at this and we think, how the hell has he done that? I imagine one limitation that obviously modern homebrew developers don't have that, you know, original developers had like 30 years ago, is kind of they can make bigger cartridges now, you know, because before the price of RAM chips and squeezing, you know,
or have it on an EverDrive or something.
Yeah. Which I imagine will be the way this will be played. I mean, a few people have been like, you know, will this be getting a release on cartridge? Obviously, with it being a Capcom franchise, I can't imagine he's going to commercially
put this out
there. But
also, like, emulators are those kind of dev kits, you know, nowadays.
Yeah.
They don't have the huge kind of dev kit machines and stuff. They use emulators, develop it there, and then blast it down, you know.
Yeah, so I think it looks like, you know, like I said, he's got a strong history in the Mega Drive homebrew scene. So this looks absolutely incredible so far. There is only a little 20-second clip that you can watch so far, but if you want to check that out, I'll put that in our show notes this week as well. Now, while we're talking about pretty cool new games, it is a Boomer Shooter of the Week time. It seems like we talk about these a hell of a lot recently, but there's a lot of good ones coming out.
every time you say that, we get comments. Boomer Shooter.
I know we do, yeah. But of course, Boomer Shooters are, for those that haven't heard us talking about these, basically old school FPS games, you know, those kind of 90s inspired, or a lot of these are actually running on original engines from back in the day. And this one actually runs on an updated Doom 2 engine. And this is a game called Beyond Sunset.
Yeah, this looks really nice, actually. It's kind of a mix between Deus Ex and Doom. Have you guys played much Deus Ex?
I never got into it. I got it for the PC when I was much younger. And at the time I was all about like time splitters, so I just wanted to run in, blow everything up. So yeah, never got into Deus Ex, unfortunately. But this screams more Duke Nukem to me than Deus Ex, but it is being described as Doom meets Deus Ex, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you've kind of got those, you know, it's very cyberpunky, isn't it? Neon everywhere. It looks very fast as well, but I think the amount of enemies that you've got in this too, you've got stuff like, you know, zombies and robots and, you know, you've got stuff like, you know, firing magic out of your bare hands.
Samurai sword as well, which is...
Samurai sword's one of the weapons
Pulse
as
rifle.
Well.
Very alien-inspired, yeah.
Yes, I mean, there's definitely a lot of kind of inspiration here as well. And this is actually available now, and there's a free demo if you want to download it. So I think in terms of, it looks a very fast-paced FPS game. I've got a feeling the kind of game I'm going to be absolutely crap at and die in about 10 seconds.
I like the concept that they've said that they're putting in bosses, and they're going to have each boss is going to have its own individual health, and it'll be like a boss battle. Because in FPSs, there's not that many boss battles anymore, and it's very nostalgic to have an FPS with bosses in it.
You got them in, you know, Doom and I think, you know, Hexen and Blood and stuff like that, but you don't really see them, and definitely don't get them in COD, do you? Like, yes. So it's cool to see these, like, you know, people flying around on jetpacks shooting, like, you know, electricity at you, which is completely filling up the entire screen, which is going to kill Dan in about 2 seconds. You know, and giant, massive, you know, mechs that look like Ed 1, what is it? Oh, what's his name? Ed 2019. I think I've just butchered that.
From Robocop.
Yeah, from Robocop. But like, yeah, it does look awesome. You know, shotgun's very, you know, Duke Nukem inspired to me. It's very like, I do love these kind of games because it's like, oh, it's the 80s, but it's like, what if the 80s never stopped and it's now 50 years in the future?
Yeah, and also that this one, I think the abilities of the kind of main protagonist is like moving left and right, sliding, kind of dodging in that way where, you know, a lot of them, you're just kind of centered in the middle. You're just going through massacring everything. This one seems a bit more kind of like, you know, slidey left and right.
Quick, yeah. It's fast. It's
fast, yeah.
It reminds me of, is it Shadow Warrior that came out, yes, you know, on those engines back in the day? But they redid the Shadow Warrior games a couple of years ago, you know, on Xbox One and stuff. And they were so fast, but they played, you know, even though they were modern, they still played very similar. And it reminds me of that, but obviously with the old school kind of like...
A bit like Half-Life when people used to do like parkour and stuff like that. And have those custom like jumping levels and stuff. It's got that vibe as well.
Yeah, so if you want a really fast-paced and what looks to be pretty tough old-school FPS game, that is available now on Steam for £8.50. So, you know, bargain at that price. And there is actually a free demo you can download if you just want to give it a little blast this weekend as well. So I'll put that in our show notes too. Now, next to me, I've got a massive box. It's always exciting, isn't it, when big parcels turn up in the post? Because we've actually been getting our conservatory refitted recently.
What you were going to say?
I was like, "Where's he going?
We're
going
to be sleeping in there tonight."
Well, my missus has just been ordering loads of stuff from there. You know, stuff from IKEA. Spent most of my Saturday building IKEA units. She got like a sofa delivered as well. So pretty much the entrance to our house has just been filled with boxes now for about 4 or 5 days. And this system turned up at the same time. So actually, I just kind of left it in the hallway for a couple of days, not realizing what it was until I opened it up. And this is something that actually is released today when this episode comes out on November the 17th. And of course, we have been talking about this on the podcast since the announcement. And this is the brand new Atari 2600 Plus. And I've got one here. I was going to say my sweaty little palms, but actually I definitely need two hands and the desk. That's how big this box is next to me. Unfortunately, I've got a feeling this beautiful box, so this beautiful packaging that they've sent mine in, is that reserved for the review units they sent out only? From what I've seen of the retail release that came out today, unfortunately, that's in a lot smaller, much more simplistic box. But this one, it's pretty much the size of a desk. It is massive. It fills up my entire table in complete white. It looks pretty much the same shape as an Atari 2600 with the Atari logo embossed on the top of the box in red. And then that's the first thing you see. There's no kind of plastic or anything in there. You've literally got the new console right in the middle of it. A couple of paddles. You get the old school Atari joystick here as well. And 4 cartridges that are nicely presented in the front of the box. So I haven't set this up and had a go of it yet because I actually want to do a YouTube video on this at the weekend. And I'm thinking, obviously, I need to kind of do my unboxing on the video. But first impressions of this are that it is a very, very well built and very nicely presented system.
Has it got your nostalgia tingling?
Well, that's the thing. So, I mean, I do have an original Atari 2600. It wasn't a system that I had back in the day. I mean, we've kind of talked about that on the podcast before, that kind of Atari's a bit before our gaming time, isn't it? Mm. So none of us have kind of really got much nostalgia for it. I mean, obviously, I know what a legendary system it is. And in terms of the look of it, I mean, yeah, it is pretty much, it looks just like a woody Atari 2600. Smaller, though, it's probably around 3/4 of the size of the original, and obviously a lot lighter than the original system was. But I think in terms of build quality and everything, it does look really nice. Now, the reason we're talking about this is because it is launch day. Maybe you've got one if you pre-ordered on Amazon. Maybe yours has turned up today. Let's put this massive box down here. But there is some more games that have been announced for it as well, including another one in the Atari XP line. And this is Dark Chambers.
I had to look this one up because I hadn't heard of this. So obviously this was an original release, you know, back in the 80s. And I'd never heard of Dark Chambers, and it was commonly referred to as Dandy or Dendy, which was meant to be D&D, like, do you get it, kind of thing?
D&D, Dendy.
Because this game was just a huge kind of like homage or inspiration from Dungeons & Dragons, and it actually went on to inspire games such as Gauntlet. So I looked it up. I was like, okay, let's see what this Dark Chambers is about. And like you say, we're kind of from before Atari. And I must say, I'm probably going to offend a lot of people here. This looks very playable for a 2600 game. Like, it's a dungeon crawler. And, you know, you play as like your little knight or your archer. And, you know, you run around the board kind of like, you know, dodging enemies, which are obviously meant to be like skeletons and goblins and stuff like that. You know, got to use your imagination a little bit, as you do with the, you know...
It's an Atari game.
But yeah, no, this looks really playable. Like, I was like, quite fancy having a go at this. But yeah, as per usual, $60, you know, for the new Atari 2600 Plus XP version of it. The artwork is pretty phenomenal. I absolutely love this kind of like, you know, 80s inspired neon medieval look. The artwork's by Butcher Billy, who's an artist who's all over the place at the moment. He's been doing a lot of his Atari artwork and stuff, but he worked on a lot of like the Stranger Things artwork and stuff like that recently. So he's been doing a lot of these kind of like 80s inspired artworks recently.
Actually, it does look a lot better than the original one. I'm looking at the original cartridge. Yeah, and I've just googled that now. Look, that looks a bit more like something like Dragon's Lair.
Yeah.
Like that kind of style, the original.
It's good to see, because, you know, when this system first came out, you guys were going, but what do we play on it? And I'm looking at this Atari XP range, and there's 15 titles on there. You know, a lot that we've covered in this podcast, and a few like re-releases of the traditional ones, but the cartridges are out there, which is just fantastic that there's 15, and I'm sure they've got more planned.
Well, I'll tell you my concern, being now an owner of this system, again, like a lot of these that we've talked about, pre-orders are available on Atari.com, but again, like a lot of these, it says this product is only available for shipping in the United States.
I guess that's their primary market, isn't it?
You've got one, though.
Yeah, but I mean, you can buy the console here. It's on Amazon, but a lot of these XP games they're releasing are only available in America.
Oh, I see. I got you.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, you've got the four games that come with it, but I'm looking, again, you know, if I want to play this Dark Chambers game on my new system that I bought here in the UK, I can't get it delivered over here. So that is a bit of a problem, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess they're trying to see how well they sell. You know, Atari America will be their primary audience. Maybe they're seeing how well the consoles sell around the world and then go, right, there's enough in that region to justify us selling the games as well.
And that's the thing. You're right. I think, you know, if suddenly they sell millions of these in Europe, I imagine they're going to start to distribute the cartridges over here pretty quick if that's the case. But it does mean, like, for us kind of early adopters, you know, if you forked out for it, it does kind of feel a bit of a... Is there going to be any new stuff to play in it over here at the moment?
I think this cartridge model is looking at stuff like the Evercade. You know, before, I didn't think the cartridge model was that strong, but looking at the Evercade and the way that people use that and love that and how the library's grown, I think it's actually quite a good way to go. A lot better than, you know, the VCS, and they had their digital store. Yeah, I think this kind of physical store is really nice, and people having them as mementos and stuff, and taking it back to those kind of days.
Yeah, I've got to say, I mean, like I said, I haven't actually powered mine up yet, and I'm not the most clued up person on kind of how, I mean, you know, I don't really think you can mess up Atari 2600 emulation because it's such a simple system. I don't imagine there's going to be frame drops and stuff like that on it. But as I said, I haven't tried mine yet. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I haven't tried mine yet, so I can't say either way. But yeah, I imagine it, you know, it probably will be quite a, you know, looking at the build quality and everything so far, it looks pretty well done. So I do agree that it is nice to have this this system out there. And very cool that Atari is supporting it. But yeah, just I think a bit more love for us international users would be nice. So if you want to check that out and pre-order it if you are in the US, I'll link that up, and of course the rest of the stories in our show notes as well. Right then, patrons, stay tuned. We have got more new stories on the way for you in just a minute, including talking about a legendary game that I can't believe never came out on the Mega Drive that is finally here, and something very cool for the Commodore Amiga as well in just a minute. Before we do that, let's take a second to give a massive thank you to this episode's sponsor, and that is our wonderful friends at Shopify. Now, if you use Shopify, how nice is this sound? You know what that sound is, don't you, Ravi?
It's a sale.
That is a sound of making money on Shopify. Whenever you make cash, you make a sale, you hear that sound. So that'll be music to your ears if you use Shopify. Now, if you're not familiar with what Shopify is, it is basically the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Because I don't know about you guys, it feels like all my mates at the moment are like, you know, running side hustles or even becoming their own boss as well. There's definitely a lot more of that going on now as well. And Shopify basically takes all the pain out of selling online or even in person out of it. So it takes care of everything for you, an all-in-one platform to start, run, and grow your business as well. And it is revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. So I mean, I know Ravi, you've done web development in the past. I mean, you've actually used Shopify. You told me about this years ago, actually.
Yeah, it's so much easier. It's an absolute nightmare setting up your own kind of service and e-commerce platform, and Shopify just makes it easy. And also having that 24-hour support as well means you're not getting harassed if you're the web developer. You know, Shopify will be able to answer all your questions.
So whatever you're selling online, it could be, you know, fine art prints, it could be, you know, fashion, it could be clothes, it could be home and garden accessories, health and beauty products as well. They will cover all your sales channels from a front of shop POS system. It is the all-in-one commerce platform. Even it can help you sell across your social media marketplaces like Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. It's got industry-leading tools to ignite your growth and give you complete control over your business. And the thing is, you don't have to learn new skills like, you know, design or coding. Instead, just concentrate on running your business and let Shopify support your success every step of the way. Now, we want you to give this a try yourself. And what about this? Sign up for a £1 a month trial period by using our exclusive link to let Shopify know that we sent you there. Really helps out the podcast as well. Head to shopify.co.uk/retrohour. All lowercase, shopify.co.uk/retrohour to take your business to the next level today. And I'll put that link in our show notes as well. shopify.co.uk/retrohour. And a big thank you to our friends at Shopify for their support of our show. And get ready to hear lots of this. Right then, only a couple of weeks to go until patrons hang out again. That is coming up next weekend, next Sunday. I can't believe how quickly the months are flying by. Then obviously that'll be the penultimate one of the year before the big Christmas celebration. Maybe you've heard us talking about these before and you're thinking, I'd love to get involved in that. It is a really good time to join us on Patreon right now and get invited to what is always our favourite weekend of the month, isn't it, when the hangouts are on?
Yeah. I absolutely love them. Meeting up with everybody and, you know, seeing all the new kind of weird devices that are coming out as well. Because honestly, I can't keep up, even though we do this podcast. We get the news. Yeah. You know, our patrons actually inform us more than the web does.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's basically a massive hangout that we all do. Think of like, you know, a massive Zoom call. I think you've described it as like the Brady Bunch before, Ravi. It is just like that. Those little windows on the screen, we all just chat away, nerd about, you know, what we've kind of done in the last month and show our pickups off and stuff like that, get advice as well. It's a bit like a virtual users group. So if you want to join us for the November Patrons Hangout, that is coming up next weekend. Of course, I did mention the patrons are getting a couple of extra exclusive news stories. We do that every week. So if you enjoy the news part of the podcast, you get another two or three stories every single episode if you're a patron. You get the show ad-free as well. If I can get it out early, you know, patrons get it first too. So a really good time to support us on Patreon, and we'd massively appreciate your help. All the details to sign up are at theretrohour.com. And of course, we like to induct new members into the most prestigious high score table in the world of retro gaming. And of course, that is the Retro Hour Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame.
And a massive thank you to our latest supporters. A big shout to Fabio,
David LeBrock,
Jay San,
and John Gelotti, who all joined us on Patreon over the last couple of weeks. Thank you so much for your support. And if you'd like to sign up as well, all the details to join our incredible patrons community are on the website right now at theretrohour.com. Right, then next, we are going to geek out about all things magazine related. A lot of those classic British gaming magazines from back in the day with, you could call him, you know, our magazine historian and somebody's keeping the flame alive by working on new retro magazines as well. Paul Monahan is our special guest next on the Retro Hour podcast. You're listening to the Retro Hour podcast, and it is time to welcome on this week's very special guest. And it is a good friend of ours as well. We always enjoy a good nostalgic chat with when we see him at events. And of course, I think we did mention at the start of the podcast that, you know, our guest this week, Paul, he's basically, I'd say, a retro gaming magazine historian. Someone who also keeps a light alive as well by working on modern retro magazines. And I think we haven't had him on the podcast for about a year and a half, so we thought it was due a little bit of a catch up and also to nerd out about retro mags, you know, those magazines that we grew up reading back in the 90s. We always enjoy talking about those. Let's welcome him on, Paul Monahan. How's it going, Paul?
Thank you for having me back. Sadly, I don't even like magazines anymore. Obviously,
oh,
give it,
all right, go.
I know.
That's the end of the interview.
I know. There we go. No, honest to God, thank you for having me back. It's brilliant. And like you say, we chat when we see each other at events and everything. And any games magazine chat doesn't take much arm twisting for me to say, yes, of course I'll come along and chat to you.
Well, I mean, we are going to talk about the, you know, the new titles that you work on, Pixel Addict and Amiga Addict, that you work on with Ravi as well. And you also host your own podcast that people, I'm sure a lot of our audience will be familiar with, but you've actually just done a new episode of Maximum Power Up as well, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah. We recorded that this week as a few days ago, sorry. So it was the first one since February. So that should be going out probably in the next, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. And we've just been knocking about a few ideas to cover a few small topics. So, yeah, it's just, if anything, it's more than time being the key issue in regards to putting that out. Because as I said before, when I've done things like interviews with, you know, magazine writers and things, it can take a lot of research looking back, you know, through the various magazines and things like that, asking for questions, getting them signed off and, you know, then editing, as you'll know all about. It's the worst part of a podcast, the editing. But the chatting, the research, that's a fun part. But when it gets to the editing,
bring on a good AI editor. That's what we need, an artificial intelligence audio editor. Someone make a good one, please.
Oh, God, yeah, that'd be perfect. It's just a very quick one. But like, I remember the first time I was editing a podcast when I was on Retro Asylum, and I asked my wife to do it for me. And I'll hold my hands up. And she did a really good job. And she went, I'm never doing that ever again, because that's absolutely horrible. But anyway, that's a totally different story.
Well, yeah, Paul does an incredible podcast. And if you like, you know, like, you do a lot of episodes about magazines, obviously, as well. Yes. So if you want to hear, like, from the horse's mouth, you know, you talk to editors and writers, some of the biggest ones in the UK magazine space. So Maximum Power Up, I'll link that up in our show notes as well.
You.
Now, let's get a bit of background on you, though, Paul, for you. I mean, people that might not be familiar kind of with your story. I mean, we always like to kind of get a bit of background on our gaming history with our guests. I mean, what kind of systems did you grow up with then? Where did it kind of all start for you?
Well, I've said before, my first own computer was via Atari ST, 520 STE, the power pack, which came with 20 games. That was Christmas 89. So it's going back a bit now. So I think it was about 10 then. And I actually wanted an Amstrad 464 with a green screen monitor, because that's what my friend had. So when I opened the ST, I was like, oh, okay, I don't know anyone with an ST. So, you know, try and get used to it and see what it's all about. And, you know, I fell in love with that quite quickly. And the same Christmas, I had friends getting Amigas. And, for a while, both machines were, I'm going to say, neck and neck, you know. Ravi might be chuckling as I say that. But by 1991, it was obviously all over, really, for the ST. Well, 92 at a push. But before having my own machine, you know, I played on friends, you know, Spectrums, Commodore 64s and things. And then from the ST, went on to the Super Nintendo, which is still my all-time favourite machine. Had a bit of time with A1200, which is my only time up until recently that I owned an Amiga. And then I went down, you know, the PlayStation route and everything for God knows how many years. And then when I started collecting retro machines again, back in the mid-noughties, it sort of just snowballed into collecting, where Retro Gaming Magazine recently launched in 2004, I think it was. You had Games TM as well. And as those two magazines covered retro, it started, you know, feeding this longing to be looking backwards. And it sort of showed you all these games that you couldn't afford when you were a kid, but then being in my 20s at the time, you know, I'm 44 now, but being in your 20s, you go, oh, I've got a disposable income. And this is before the retro price boom that we've all, you know, moaned about over several conversations. Like, do you remember when this was £5 and not £40? And
as glory, you know, days.
Yeah. Do you remember going to have car boots and finding this? Even though recent stories when you're picking up, you know, all your Sega hardware, Dan, you know, it's crazy. Mm. So yeah, then I went through a bit of a period of selling it all off. And then from 2012, when I did start collecting again seriously, that led to me aiming to collect the Super Play Magazine top 100 games, a part of my retro games collection that I still own. Not every single game is boxed. But I think there's 97 which are boxed. But the price of Super Nintendo games is just, yeah, thank you. It's crazy though. Yeah, people got involved and helped out in the community for that as well. You know, like, and I've made quite a few good friends. Like people like Will Overton actually helped me out with Pocky and Rocky. And he goes, there you go, I'll do you a good price. And then he sent me, I think it was Final Fantasy 2. I was like, wow, amazing. He goes, there you go, happy Christmas. That was a good few years ago now, though.
Nice.
Well, you know, when you were younger, you didn't have as much choice of getting things. You know, you had limited kind of pocket money or spending money. How did you make your kind of decisions on what games magazine was the one that you wanted?
Well, all my spending money and paper round money, because I did morning paper round, afternoon, and a couple of Sundays. And again, I mentioned this quite a bit, but they always paid you on the Saturday afternoon. And by the Saturday afternoon, I was probably left with about 70p of my week's wage, because it'd be, can you just put it on the tab? Can you put it on the tab? And then, you know, it'd come to your wage packet on the Saturday and there'd be nothing in it because I spent it all on games magazines. For me, the big thing was which writers were involved. So we've said before, people like Jazz Rignall, Neil West, Steve Jarrett, you know, like we're talking about some of the proper greats. And you started getting used to believing their judgment when it came to certain titles and things. The other one is what free gifts came in magazines, something we might touch on in a bit. And I think that's just it, you know, back then in the 90s, like, you know, about like 93, 94, every single console seemed to have several magazines, you know, before, you know, they started dropping off and folding and things. Because, you know, even by then you started like the odd 8-bit magazines like Commodore Format still hanging on. That was out around the same time as the PlayStation official magazine.
It was about 95.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. So I felt like they catered to everyone. But again, I know it's an obvious thing to say, but because we didn't have the internet freely available and things like that, you wanted to be like a sponge for all this information. You know, it was such a special time.
And like you said, that individual magazines, you know, you could end up spending all your money on like Sega magazines or Amiga magazines or something. Do you think multi-system magazines benefited from covering everything and, you know, having that kind of all-round look?
To a point, yes. I mean, I've spoke to some people and they were put off by them. So even though something like with Games Master magazine, when that started off, some of the issues there were like 140, 150 pages, you know, quite thick. And even though by 93, it was still the big focus was on, like, you know, your Nintendo machines, your Sega machines. They still had like a lot of Amiga stuff in as well. And back then we used like a lot of Amiga format writers as well. So, you know, we had like a lot of knowledgeable people and they really banged that Amiga drum. Same with the CD32 as well. And that was good to see because there weren't that many exclusive CD32 magazines, but any key titles were always covered. So I always liked seeing what was going on with other machines, even though at one point I'd only ever have like one machine. You know, I had my Game Boy and then, like, you know, my ST, and then I had my Game Boy and SNES, and then still kept the Game Boy for a bit, and then, you know, went to the A1200 and stuff, like I said. But it's not like things are now, you know, or even 10 years ago, where I don't know, like if I look back, say 20 years again, back in my 20s, where I had like the GameCube, the original Xbox, the PlayStation 2, there's no way that would have happened when I was a teenager back in the 90s, even if I was buying things out of Loot, the ads paper and stuff. It comes down to money, doesn't it? Because, yeah, you know, the games weren't always cheap. Granted, you had ways of getting new games for the Amiga, but for things like, you know, any of the consoles, it involved birthdays, Christmas, sometimes, you know, doing odd jobs and things, but also being very, very selective what games you're going to buy. So you needed to be able to trust, you know, what you were reading in the magazines. You know, we always mention, me and Ravi, the Rise of the Robots review in Amiga yes. Action, because that was like 90-odd% and every other magazine was 20 or 30, if you're lucky.
There was definitely Amiga 7%, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
There was definitely some like delusion. you know, some of those later Amiga magazines. And what I used to do was I would look back at the multi-system magazines just to get an actual normal perspective on kind of how the game scene was.
No, I think I was just saying, I mean, the best time to buy a multi-form magazine, being like CVG and Games Master, the biggest ones there, if you were in the market for going, right, what console, what computer am I going to buy next? Yeah. That's what you wanted, you know.
What's coming fantastic. Up, you know?
Yeah, yeah, because you could see what was fading away by the coverage as well. So I'd probably say a couple of years into Games Master, so like 1995, you know, the Amiga coverage was almost non-existent. But luckily, you still had the, you know, fully covered Amiga magazines, you know, like Amiga Power and things like that. So, you know, everyone was catered for. I know I keep like banging on about that point, but it's just so difficult, like, you know, to try and explain it to if you weren't there, you know.
Well, I remember, and you know, I've got a vivid memory of, you know, being with my dad when I just got my Amiga and walking into just a local post office and then seeing it was issue 33 of Amiga Format magazine, I think March 92 issue. Mm. And it had Felix the Cat on the front. Because we were doing like a feature on animation, and it had Myth, History in the Making on the cover disc, and a program called Vista Pro. And that I remember it clear as day, that moment when I saw that on the shelf and just been like, you know, Dad, I want that. And he bought it for me, you know, having something else to play apart from Lemmings and Captain Planet on my Amiga at home. I mean, is there any like kind of memories you've got like that? Any kind of magazine features or articles that like stood off the shelf and was really memorable for you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I've mentioned this a few times, but the big one for me was the first magazine that I bought with my own money, which was an ST Action. And that came with the Spy Who Loved Me demo. So I'd had my ST for about a year, and then I was like, right, well, I'm going to start getting magazines, you know, now. This one's spending money on. So again, probably 11 then. And I look back at this and I just remember, you know, reading this magazine for the first time, playing the demo again and again. And I think the demos back then, because the discs had, you know, two or three on, you know, most of the discs, two or three demos, it always seemed like just enough, you know. So if you had, you know, the weekend free and you weren't going out anywhere, it was perfect, you know. So I think that's a big thing for me. Like that's my like massive memory. And the other one is issue one of Super Play with a little pin badge, which I think is a really nice free gift, you know, something that luckily I have still got, but I had to get, you know, rebuy that. And then I also had one gifted to me as well, which was quite nice. I think it's because I bang on about that magazine so much, you know. So, yeah, I think that's just it. You look through these magazines now and so many, you know, memories just come flooding back, you know, from going back to being 11, 12, 13, you know, it's like it really, I find a lot more enjoyment going through the magazines and playing the games. You know, I've felt like that for quite a long time now because I sort of, it's going to sound weird, I appreciate them because I think back to that time where I couldn't have so many games available, you know, like you can go on to your Switch and download a, you know, Capcom collection or something like that. You know, I never thought I'd have like such easy access to things like Final Fight, Bionic Commando and stuff like that, you know, because again, I always think back like, oh God, this used to cost £30, £40 or whatever. Yeah.
Well, I turn on my Mega Drive and I've got an EverDrive in there with, like, you know, every Mega Drive game on it, you know, that list there. And I'm like, if I'd have saw this 30 years ago, it would have blown my mind.
They were also a good resource for kind of, you know, we've used them for research on this podcast and just also setting your head back into the time and looking at the prices and seeing what else was kind of advertised. They're a good little kind of time machine, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. And the thing is, and this is something as a magazine collector and something that quite a few of us discuss, not everything gets digitized and put on, you know, Internet Archive or Amiga Magazine Rack and things like that. Or if you are put up there, you sometimes have, I think Future have asked a few people to take scans down. So who knows, maybe one day we might go through their own archives and release something, you know. But
yeah, I saw Amiga format had gone off archive recently.
Yeah, yeah. Which that just makes me want to collect all the Amiga formats, you know. But 136 issues is quite a pile. And with a massive box of Amiga magazines at the end of a bed, I already have a very unhappy wife who just goes, are you ever going to move this box of magazines? It's like, well, no, because I just need them in case, like, you go, hang on a minute, I've just thought of an idea. What issue was it in? And then you're just like a madman going through this box and you've got magazines strewn everywhere while you're looking to see which one had, you know, a certain review in and stuff like that. But like you say, Ravi, they come in handy so much for interview research and things like that. You know, it's helped me out so much. And then also, you know, I enjoy taking them to events, showing the people that worked on them, you know, like taking them down memory lane a little bit as well. Because obviously for them, it was just a job. For me, it was a massive, massive passion.
And a lot of the kind of announcements and stuff, you know, that of games that never happened, of, you know, projects that were going to get released and stuff. There's a lot of stuff that's not on the internet in them.
No, exactly, exactly. And I look back. I spoke to Gary Penn recently, and I know we've both had him on both podcasts, you know, mine and yours. And we're talking about The One and that magazine done by EMAP. The big thing for that is they got so many exclusives and these work in progress reports from so many games that never came out, or games that, you know, had bits scrapped from them and things like that. And it's just great to see, you know, I've mentioned it on a Discord chat for Amiga Addict going, does anyone know what happened to this game? You know, and everyone's like, yeah, I think it got canned. And then you start, you know, looking on the internet and you've got people like Frank Gaskin, who does Games That Weren't, you know, a bit of a plug for him there. And, you know, the work he does, I look at it and just go, my God, this is amazing. But this is why the magazines are important. As time goes by, they're going to get more dog-eared. They're going to get lost. You know, if someone passes away and then someone goes up to the attic and goes, oh my God, what are these magazines here for? You know, skip, you know, and you just never know. And that's why the preservation side's important, but it is becoming more expensive to get certain issues and things like that. You know, I started collecting again in, it was 2013, 2014, when I started getting magazines again, I got the first few Mean Machine Sega for a penny each on eBay, and the postage was costing me more, you know, and it's like, it never happened now,
Now they'll be like £7 or £12, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I blame people like me, sadly, banging on about magazines, you know. And I'm sort of like a bit annoyed at myself. But then again, you know, I've met like a lot of like-minded collectors and friends and things, you know.
I blame you as well, Paul, because I threw all my magazines out. I think we've had this conversation.
Well, I've actually got half of Dan's here.
Yeah, I give a lot to Ravi, rest one in the bin about maybe a decade ago now. And then gradually, I think whenever I see you at an event, you're like, oh, there's magazines down there. Someone's selling it. And I'm like, end up buying inevitably probably about 50 quid's worth.
Yeah.
Every event I go to. So I've got most of the Amiga formats and CU Amigas again next to me now,
which is
cool
great.
To own. I do like it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, like I drive to events now, but like before I was driving. So let's say, you know, going back 7 or 8 years, the amount of times I'd say go to, you know, Mark Jowett's Sega Mag stall, and I've promised no more cheap plugs. honestly, I get on the train with like a bag full of magazines, and then I'd just be like, this is brilliant. I'm just going to sit here, always try and get a table seat and just sit there reading magazines. And then I just go, I wonder what people actually think of me. Like, it's obviously a guy in his, well, 30s back then, you know, and just say like reading about Street Fighter 2, you know. But again, it's a magical time.
It's honestly better than doom scrolling, Paul.
No, exactly, exactly. And I tell you what, if you looked at any magazine back in like 1992, 1993, you wanted that Street Fighter 2 news. So when things like Street Fighter 2 Turbo was announced, and you'd be like going, oh my God, it's one tiny little screenshot. Finally, the rumors are true. You can be the bosses and stuff. Or I remember like seeing Super Street Fighter 2, you know, with the new challengers, and you're like, oh, who are they going to be? You know, who are these new fighters? And then you get magazine specials just on Super Street Fighter 2, you know, to show you how to do all the moves and everything like that. And you'd spend hours. We've talked about, you know, manuals and how we miss the manuals in games. But, you know, the magazines just showed you so much. They showed you just enough. You know, I never think they showed you too much. They showed you just enough just to make you really want, you know, what they were showcasing. You know, everything was so well thought out.
Were there ever any, you mentioned about, you know, kind of announcements and stuff there. And I remember, you know, we had Will Overton on here a couple of months ago, and I looked through some of the old Super Plays and, you know, kind of following the news stories about the upcoming Super Nintendo CD that obviously became the PlayStation, never happened in the end. And I remember reading, you know, I was going through archive.org some old issues of Amiga Shopper and following their news stories in like, you know, early 92, talking about how the Amiga 800 is coming soon and the rumored specs, obviously a machine that never made it to market. Do you got any memories of stuff like that you kind of remember reading about, big announcements that kind of never happened?
Yeah, I mean, the big one is a magazine that doesn't get mentioned very often is GB Action. And basically, it was done by Europress, mostly Europress, and it went to Maverick magazines and died off. But it did last for, about 37, 38 issues. But early on, it came out from the ashes of Games X magazine, a weekly magazine, one of my all-time favourites. So a lot of staff went from there and went working on GB Action. But I think it was either one or two, and they were talking about the colour Game Boy. Now, fair enough, we have the Super Game Boy on the SNES, and eventually we did get a colour Game Boy, but it was always one of these where it was just, not yet, but it's coming, not yet, but it's coming. And I think it only just came out quite near the end of, I can't remember the exact date off the top of my head, but you know, like every issue was again trying to drip feed these like little facts, and oh, it's going to have this, it's going to have that, it's going to show this in colour, it is an artist mock-up. And you look at all the artist mock-ups and things, and again, it's still exciting. But then like what Ravi just said, this is why it's interesting looking back at these magazines, because you just go, it played out nothing like that. But it's like an important historical article, you know. We've talked about, you know, the Nintendo PlayStation and stuff. Like when that prototype came out a few years ago, it's still exciting, isn't it? You hear things like that because we love what we cover.
Yeah, you can follow that excitement.
Yeah.
When you read back those old issues of the magazines, which I think is very cool.
Because again, you didn't have the internet. So anything you could get. So again, you buy things like the American magazines. I never bought any Japanese magazines. I don't know if people like Forbidden Planet may have had them in. But we had a couple of newsagents that did Game Pro and Electronic Gaming Monthly. And you tried to get that sort of bit of insight, you know, on news and things, but then not everything would be coming out in our country anyway. So what I liked doing was just to see the different game cover art. You know, it's I was like, oh wow, that's how they do it over in America, you know, because you'd see the odd game in your independent shop. You know, luckily we had a few near me in Bolton and Lee, 5 miles the other way of where I lived. So, you know, I felt like if you read the American magazines as well, you had quite a fuller picture, you know, and a bit of better idea if you were going secondhand game shopping, you know. There was a place called Bowlers in Manchester at Trafford Park. It's still, I think it's still there. Yeah, they still do the car boot, I'm sure. But back then it was like a pirate's paradise on a Sunday after the computer market. But there were stores that sold console games and they'd be doing it for 30 quid, 35 quid. Now, I don't know if we were hot, but, you know, it was like a good bit, you know, cheaper.
Half the price, really, then.
More or less, yeah. And I was like, this is brilliant. So every so often, you know, going over there. And again, that's where it helped, reading the magazines. I don't think I've mentioned this before, but I used to have, I may have mentioned it on Maximum Power Up, but I used to have a little notebook and I'd write down the score that each magazine gave a game and then work out the average, you know. And so anytime I'd go game shopping, that little book would come out with me, you know, trying to find what was decent. I really wish I still had that now, but that's quite depressing thinking.
That's a good way of doing it, though, because, you know, now you can just pull it up on your phone.
Oh,
obviously,
yeah, I know.
You know, having that in your pocket is really cool.
But then you'd be like going, so Total gave it 81%, Superplay gave it 90, you know, stuff like that. And, oh, madness. But the thing is, anytime I bought a second-hand game, I'd be trading in other games towards it. And I remember coming back so many times with worse titles because you'd think, right, you're getting less. So you'd be like going, I've got £35 trade. What can I get? Some obscure game that, you know, it is like on a bottom shelf somewhere in a tatty box, you know, and you're like, oh my God, why have I bought this, you know? But anyway, sorry, I'm just depressing myself thinking back.
You know, you actually made me think of something then when you mentioned about going to Bowlers and, you know, whether they were kind of hot games or, you know, I remember, you know, seeing Amiga copy games at market stores and that kind of thing too. And one thing the magazines always did, and I understand why they did it, obviously they always took a really harsh anti-piracy stance. And I remember pretty much every year in, you know, the computer magazines in particular, you know, like Amiga Format and Amiga Shop and stuff like that, there'd always be like an anti-piracy feature that was generally a cover article going on about how bad it was and you shouldn't do it. And we've actually had, you know, magazine journalists on before, and like, yeah, we all did it, you know, the magazines.
Yeah, some of them had like sketchy PD houses in the back, and some of the listings of, you know, machines that you could buy would like come with copy games and stuff when people were doing that. But they would have these huge articles like, no, I guess they had to kind of do that to, you know, show that they were on the right side.
Yeah. I mean, that's just it. I mean, especially when I was, you know, buying ST magazines and Amiga magazines. It's probably no secret that many of us had, you know, find a ways of getting discs with game content on and things like that. You know, it's, I remember Zero Magazine, they had, what was it? It was like Blogosoft. I spoke to Dave Wilson, who was the editor quite a bit back now. But he was saying, like, obviously it was just this dodgy guy who was selling copied games and things, because they always used to have the fast adverts in there as well.
Yeah.
And it sounds daft, really, because like my dad was in the police as well. And I always thought, oh God, if he finds out that I've just got a load of copied games, you know, even when my dad weren't together, I just always thought like, oh God, he can't come round to where I live, go to the bedroom and just see this, you know, plastic disc box with a load of copies in.
Handcuffs on.
I know. There you go. Oh.
Do you remember those?
That's my weekend sorted.
Do you remember those classified advert magazines you used to get? I think there was one called AdMag or there were like these huge classified adverts. People sell cars on them and all kinds of stuff. And yeah, the retro systems in there were always like very sketchy, and you could get all the imports and stuff on those. And I'd often get one of those as well as getting my, you know, computer magazine.
You always saw like any computers that were sold secondhand though. You'd always get, you know, a load of extra discs.
Box of blank discs, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, just while we're on piracy, the one thing I remember was, again, looking in Loot. Now, I've only ever owned one once, but it was a super wild card for the SNES. And back then, it was obviously copying carts onto a floppy disk. And I could never work it out. You know, I'm not just saying that because I'm chatting quite openly about piracy and stuff. But I always found it weird because, obviously, the magazines never really mentioned the super wild card. I can't even recall seeing it in a classified ad saying Super Play, you know, anything like that. But obviously, I think they were a little bit more guarded about it. It makes me wonder how they'd be if you mentioned before about, what's it called? But you got for your Mega Drive, Dan.
Oh, the Everdrive.
Yeah, the Everdrive. Sorry. Yeah. Mine just went then. So, like, it makes me wonder how they would cover things like the Everdrive now. Now, obviously, we're talking like consoles that are no longer active and things, but, you know, it's it just seems in not that many years, really, how quick it's changed, you know.
It always felt a bit like, you know, because obviously, like Ravi mentioned then, I guess, because they had to be on the side of the software houses, hence these massive anti-piracy promotions that they'd always run. But in some ways, it kind of felt like, as a reader, they were kind of out of touch with kind of what was going on.
Yeah, I mean... Again, people that we spoke to, the likes of Ocean, Gremlin or whatever, I suppose from their point of view, they would have their budget range. So they probably go, well, look, you don't need to be pirating games. We've got enough software out there, you know, at reasonable prices and things. And, you know, you could go onto the market, you like legit market, and buy proper box games, like, again, where I lived, you know, from £5 up to £30, you know, for the Amiga and things.
I think a lot of them quite acted like a guide of how to do piracy by saying, this is not what you do. Like, I couldn't imagine a magazine nowadays doing like, oh, you know, you can defeat the Nintendo Switch with a safety pin. You know, but back then they'd be like, this is how people pirate games. Don't do it. It's bad. But this is like X copy, and this is, you know, and it would, or go to your local supermarket, go to your local car park or something, you know.
I can't remember though how I learnt, because obviously I had, you know, copied games from the ST, you know, despite adverts in the mags and stuff. But I don't know. It's just, I think it's either an older family member and, you know, this wisdom's passed on generation to generation, you know, and things like that. And, you know, I think back to the days at high school, and it'd be like, right, for 50p a disc, I can get you a copy of this, this, and this, and this. And, you know, you'd be there more or less with an A4 piece of paper, ticking a load of, you know, discs and that you want. And then 2 days later, there you go. There's your weekend sorted, you know.
Yeah, it's. I always find it interesting that people say that, like, piracy killed this certain system or that. And then, you know, the PlayStation came out that was massively popular. There were these lists of copied discs and CDs that you could get as well.
Didn't do the PlayStation though as on a piracy. I know we, you know, you've covered this before, but, you know, in regards to what was it like, if you quickly flip open your lid, you know, it's
the swap trick.
Yeah, I never did that. And somehow my original PlayStation model with the audio ports in the back is still just about working somehow, you know. So I did look after it. And I don't know, I took it a lot more seriously then. And that could have just been a case of I was working by the time, you know, I got a PlayStation, or, you know, working part time. So, you know, I was like, well, I'll just buy the games I want and stuff. It's just more as those teenagers, you know, on their home computers. But yeah,
Well, one thing that, you know, was definitely a big appeal when you're choosing a magazine in the newsagent was the cover disc.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still got something kind of spring to mind. I remember the first time I got, you know, the Hired Guns cover disc on Amiga format. Spent so long playing that. Lemmings 2 they gave away as well, a couple of demos. Level demos of Lemmings 2 on Amiga format. That was incredible. The giveaway Amos, the programming language. And I know, actually, I think, didn't you cover like some of the best magazine cover discs in Amiga Addict recently as well? I think you did a feature on
it. We did.
Yeah.
It must be about, I'll tell you what, seriously, it's about 2 years ago now. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. We do have a classic cover disc, half yeah. page, but I did do a feature on a few of my favourite ones, and God, that yes. was a bit back.
Wow. But okay, the yeah. thing is, sooner in my memory than
oh, no,
than
no, it no. It's,
was,
it's, yeah. it's good that you remembered, you know, but then you've mentioned two good points there, really, because you've got the game side. And obviously, Amiga format was amazing with this because they went through a period. I know I'd said to talk about games for a sec, but you went through full price serious software, you know, like you say, with like Amos or
Octomad, you know, or like, something
yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Yeah. And they went through this period of having two, it was when Marcus Dyson was editor. And so about 93, 94, they had like two discs. And it's like free software package with like 80 quid. And you're thinking, yeah. well, this magazine is $3.95. It's a bargain, you know. And, you know, it's like back then, even if you weren't going to use it, it was good to have just in case you got into that serious side of, you know, the Amiga. But then on the game side, and we talked about, you know, things like, you say, Lemmings 2 levels. We mentioned Cannon Soccer a million times. But
oh, yeah.
the thing is, let's say you were a, and this is where magazines are important. Let's say you're a full completist for Sensibles games. So you go, right, well, there's obviously no disc box for that, but I need to make sure I get Cannon Soccer in my collection to go in my Sensible Software collection, you know, and things like that. And again, the One Amiga got some really, really good demo discs. And like before when Ravi said, so like, why did you buy certain titles? It'd be for things like that, you know.
And it would, I think a lot of that was also to kind of stimulate the market. So they would have like the previous version of the title, but then the new version yeah. on sale.
Yeah,
so, you know, yeah. people would kind of get into that, but then they'd talk about all the new features that were going to happen in like Cinema 4D or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And again, they'd have like, you know, tenner off if you buy it through the magazine as well and things like that. Yeah. They knew what their audience wanted because I'm going to sound very cheesy saying this. It was written by fans for fans, you know, yeah, trying not yeah. to like laugh my head off saying it. But these people, they knew the stuff. And this is, again, what I said before, you know, you trusted these people because they're telling you what to spend your money on, you know, at the end of the day. Granted, we've already talked about not everything was bought. But, you know, if you were buying, you know, a full price piece of software, you wanted to make sure it was something good. And on that side, it was amazing. Obviously, the time you went onto the PlayStation magazines, that continued, you know, official PlayStation magazines selling by the bucket load because...
Oh, those demo
discs. Yeah, those demo discs, you know, which were absolutely packed. You know, so before when I'm talking about the ST discs with two or three demos on, some of these had like seven or eight, you know, and you're like going, this is amazing. That'd keep you going for absolutely ages, you know. And the demos seem to get bigger as well. So, you know, the key one that always gets brought up is on... Mean Machine Sega with Panzer Dragoon Saga, disc one of a game on the cover of a magazine, you know, which gave you hours. You know, it's that was a crazy
thing. And someone like me who's crap at games, I mean, that would probably get, all I get into in the game anyway. I wouldn't get further than that. So.
No, but that's just it. It's just, it's absolutely insane, like the things that they gave away. I mean, I know that, like, you know, I mentioned it in, when we were just messaging each other before, Dan, but if you couldn't give away demos, you had to look at other things to give away. So the big one for me, being at high school at the time, was I absolutely loved pin badges. And CVG used to always have, like, give away pin badges, like, you know, Mario Kart, Street Fighter 2. Again, Street Fighter 2 at the time being absolutely huge. Anything Street Fighter 2, posters, stickers, you wanted it. You wanted to shout how much you loved this series of games, you know. And one of the things that's like been on my mind a bit recently is I speak to some collectors and they want to collect a full set of a magazine, but we also want the free gifts as well. And that gets really, really difficult. You know, that's something that I don't think I'd get a full set of free gifts to go with a full set of magazines, you know, not when you're talking posters and stickers and things like that. You know, you got to be really, really, really lucky there.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, they got separated from the magazine. People lost them and everything too. It's very hard to get a lot of those kind of freebies they give, or even get the magazine today with a cover disc.
In the comic world, like, I know a lot of 2000 AD collectors and stuff. And if you've got like the issues from the 70s, you know, with the add-on on the front and everything, yes, they're worth like, yeah, thousands. But without it, it just drops in price massively.
It's crazy. I mean, like, with Superplay, I mentioned the badge before, and then you have a look at, this is probably the thing, because it's my favourite magazine, this is what I've probably got the most gifts for. So, you know, I've got things like Akira cards that came with it when they were promoting manga and anime. And then one thing, I didn't even remember this, it came with like one issue, and it was a Killer Instinct art print, and I saw it like on eBay, and it was like a tenner with another couple of magazines. So I bought it just for that, and then just sold on the magazines. You know, I was like, I've just got to get this art print, you know. And I had a quick look through all the extra freebies, you know, that I've still got in my collection, and it's just things like calendar that I'm missing and stuff like that. You know, I go over to like my mum's house and I still got things like Street Fighter 2 and CEBG stickers on bits of nice, you know, the wardrobe and stuff like that, bedside cabinet and stuff, and you're just thinking, wow, you know. Now that really is a blast from the past. But I think everyone's got a favorite freebie that they remember because it enticed you to buy that magazine.
Yeah, I remember buying an issue of Amiga Shopper, and they said, you know, the first ever hardware giveaway on a magazine cover. Right. It was basically a little bit of plastic called a tracy. So you stuck it to the side of your mouse with Velcro. It had crosshairs on it, and you could basically trace outline things into Deluxe Paint.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, and they were selling those for about 7-8 quid. But, I mean, I did actually use it a few times, so it was quite a cool little giveaway.
Well, yeah, at least you actually used it. The one thing that I remembered, and I've had split opinion on this, because once with Super Pro magazine done by Paragon, they came with, it was a cartridge holder, and it was three pieces of plastic that stacked together. And I was like, my God, what the hell is this? This is rubbish, you know. But then I've spoke to some people that collect N64 magazine. I think they did something similar, and they absolutely love this cartridge holder, you know, just because not everyone kept the boxes back then, which just sounds absolutely insane nowadays. You know, I've had friends in the past, back when we were teenagers, who just basically, you know, if a box rips or whatever, or whatever, I'll just chuck it, you know, or I just keep the carts anyway and just chuck the boxes and manuals. I'm like, what? You know, I found it a bit odd, you know, 30 years ago. Now I think it just makes me want to weep.
Well, you mentioned there Cannon Soccer as well, which obviously is an incredible game in its own right, but obviously that was a cover disc for Amiga format, the Christmas 1993 issue.
Yeah.
And again, I've got vivid memories of being in my my local shopping mall, you know, all the Christmas songs playing, the tinsel was up, and going into WH Smith and picking that up, and then getting home, Christmas tree was up at home, and, you know, peeling that off. And I remember those discs were actually translucent discs.
Yes. Got,
it was like see-through green, that disc was.
It's
the
so
Cannon
nice,
Soccer
though.
One.
But it still looks good now, you know what I mean?
That's the thing, is those Christmas issues, though, they always felt like such an occasion, didn't they? I mean, have you kind of got any favourite, you know, Christmas issues of magazines any memories of those?
Again, the big ones for me, the one I've got next to me is like a recent edition. Not one of my necessary favourites, but this is like December 90 of Ace magazine. And again, this is like 180 pages for £1.60 with Golden Axe on the cover. And it also came with a... Again, this is what I'm saying about the free gifts. It also came with this Game Boy Companion. So this is the complete handheld Nintendo gaming guide. And it was quite funny because it was like, it's like an advert, obviously, for the Game Boy. And it's saying the year is 2020 facts from the past for immediate release. And I'm just like going, what is this? And I'm like going, it's talking about 2020. We passed that year now. But we're talking about it, you know, this is a futuristic machine that can do this, that, and the other. And I look at it and I just think it sounds absolutely crazy, you know, that they put things together like that. You know, they write these like little hardware guides, well, written by people from the future. But anyway, sorry, I'm going off a tangent there. But no, favorite magazines, any of the Christmas ones, because you'd always get 180 pages, 200 pages, the Amiga magazines, 300 pages. You know, I got given, I think it may be 1992's January Amiga format. It had like Lemmings on the cover of one of the Lemmings games. I was like, there's 296 pages in this, and you feel it, it's so heavy, you know, for a magazine. But yeah, I think those days are sadly gone. You know, it's hard to obviously do magazines, but you think how many adverts are in them back then. Not every single title was full of adverts, but again, speaking to Marcus Dyson when he was on Amiga format, so those issues that we remember so fondly were an absolute pain in the backside for him, because he was told he had to do 13 issues a year, or if they plan the magazine and then they've got another 4-page advert taken out by, you know, a mail order company or something, he says it just messed everything up. So his magazine memories are a bit different to mine. You know, it's I think it brings back nightmares.
Hard work and slog for him, and sweat and tears.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I remember speaking to Jazz Rignall a couple of years ago, and I was saying, oh, like, what are your favourite Amiga, not Amiga, what are your favourite Christmas memories? He goes, I hated it because everything was just rush, 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 rush. He goes, it wasn't a relaxing time, you know. And it's same when you we speak to the software houses, because if anything slipped, they're still rushing for any very, very last minute things out. So I think for us as kids back then, brilliant, you know, we've been given a 300 page magazine to read through, you know, or a new game to play on. But I think those people who brought us this stuff are, you know, very stressed out at the time.
Yeah, it was amazing when he had like 2 weeks off school, though, and having that huge magazine and that always amazing cover disc at Christmas.
I know. It's, well, hours spent.
You know, talking of a Christmas issue, we've just finished a big one on Amiga Addict as well. And how does it feel now? You know, you've been on that magazine for quite a long time.
it's well, when we did our Christmas one last year, and we had like Paul Kitchen do the artwork, and I remember having this conversation with you guys, well, with Ravi and the team, should say, sorry Dan, and it's like, okay, we've got to have a Christmas cover every single time. I'm like, really? You know, I'm not personally mad on Christmas, but I think it still has a bit of a nostalgic, you know, hit you in the feels type thing. Because again, on Pixel Addict, you know, we've gone for a bit of a festive feel and things like that. And I think it depends, I suppose, what job you do. Because when I'm not working on magazines, I work in retail. And after 27 years in retail, it's my Christmas memories are quite
a songs months before Christmas, just getting blasted.
My eyes twitching as we just speak, and it's just like, you know, thinking back.
Those opening bars of Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas.
I know. Luckily, it's got slightly easier. We tend not to do as many, you know, late night openings, shopping centres as you know, we used to back then. But no, it's good. It really, really is. It's hard work, as Ravi knows, especially when he's got me in his ear going, Ravi, where's the stuff? Ravi, where's the stuff?
Ravi, I'm
doing it now. I'm just doing it now. All right, okay. Next day, where's the stuff? But no, it's good. I mean, look, I'm always going to have that passion for the magazines. But the thing, again, I know that I mentioned in the chat was, and it's not just me, but Edge magazine turned 30 this year. It's one of the few remaining magazines, you know. PC Gamer turned 30, Edge turned 30, Retro Gamer's about to turn 20, even Amiga Addict we're now working on issue 26, which equals Amiga Active magazine.
Yeah, I think we're just hitting the whole run of Amiga Active, which was the biggest one after CU Amiga. And then it collapsed after 26. So hopefully if we do 27, we'll...
I know. Well, yeah, that's enough to spur us on. I mean, even with Pixladic now, about 17. And, you know, I see this these milestones in my head. You know, it's crazy. I mean, the one thing that really, really hit home, just jumping back onto Edge, was, right, they did. When Edge hit 30 back in August, I remember buying issue one of Edge because it came in the sealed plastic bag and I was like, oh, what's this? This is meant to be really, really...
The Rise of the Robots on the front.
That was issue three. One had CDI, no, maybe CDI or...
3DO.
Yeah, 3DO. Yeah. Sorry, this is what I'm getting to, midpoint. I could have just cheated. But basically, nothing happened from Edge. I thought, how have you let this go by? You know, this celebration. Why is nothing out in August 2023 shouting about 30 years? And then they did this issue 390, which has just gone, well, it flew off the shelves. So this came out in October. And a load of magazine collectors, myself included, have been scrambling around trying to get it. You've got people trying to sell it, you know, for about 90 quid on eBay and things.
Wow.
But it comes with a poster. And it's like this pixel art poster. And when you open it up, I don't even know why I'm opening it up because I know what's on the other side. On one side is the pixel art cover. And then inside are all 390 covers of Edge. In this one shot, you know, this poster one shot, right. It's absolutely amazing, you know, because again, a lot of memories there. But you know, they've just covered like the top 100 games in Edge's lifetime. I'm not going to spoil the list because it will be out there somewhere. But you look back at it, and for people like us that have been into games for so long, you know, we spent our teenage lives onwards, you know, more or less obsessing over them. We're still talking about them every single day, every single week. You look at it and go, Christ, we've seen so much. You know, I know there's people out there like who've worked in the 8-bit era and, you know, or they've been gaming longer than us, you know, they're in the 50s and 60s, whatever. But it's amazing. You know, you see so much. And I think what I do like about Edge, it is just, it's that sort of connection still to that time. You know, you had, Richie Shoemaker recently as well.
Yes.
Really, you know, and he obviously loves PC Zone, you know. So when I got to talk to Richie, I was like, this is amazing. This is someone who wants to keep the memory alive, write about the Dennis magazines, you know, like Zero by Dennis is one of my favorite magazines, you know, Your Sinclair. And I think whoever you talk to, you know, gamers and magazine collectors, we've all got our favourites, you know.
And I think it's kind of gone back to like a cottage industry as well. You've still got the big players there, which is great to see, Edge and stuff. But I'm noticing so many kind of just fan-made magazines coming out. I can't kind of keep up with it. I bet you've seen stuff coming from all angles.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've said before, I think... I might be wrong here, but because there's so many of us who went through this golden period that I've mentioned several times now, either like late 30s up to say the age of 50, you know, we all want to write about, you know, what's going on, our memories, things like that. You know, you got people like, you know, Graham Mason, who's obviously made more of a name for himself and things, you know. And you just go, these people got the passion, you know. You've still got people like Jess Rignall still writes a little bit, you know, for 364. And there's a lot out there. I feel like everyone's catered for, you know. It is hard work. It really is hard work. But
I think, you know, new ground's getting covered as well. So, you know, looking at stuff like Debug and also looking at Evercade Evolution as well, which is exclusive Evercade magazine as well.
Yeah, it's, an Evercade magazine. You know, and when I looked at it, it's nicely put together because I saw that. It was a Nottingham event last year.
The Video Games Expo.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. So I feel like there's enough to cover, definitely. And I think that's mainly because there's such a retro boom, and not like a recent one now, you know, this has been going on for quite a few years, retro styled games. You know, if it's not like a compilation of, you know, IRM or Capcom classics or whatever, there's games that are going down that style, you know, so there's so much to cover. It's never going to be how it was, but people are trying.
And how do you go about, like, you know, picking some of the content as well? Because I know you're on Pixel Addict as well, and Pixel Addict is a multi-system magazine, and you've got lots of people contributing different articles, different ideas.
Yeah.
And, kind of picking what goes in and what people are going to pick up on. That must be a tough job.
I'll be honest, that really is. And Ian, who's on Amiga Addict, goes, Paul, I don't know how you do it, because with Amiga Addict, you're talking about Amiga. With Pixel Addict, you are covering a lot more. I mean, by now, you have an idea of which systems are popular. You know, things like Acorn products do so well. You know, like when we did things like the Commodore Plus 4.
Yeah.
Feature that went down really well. History of the PlayStation. I've got some big ideas for 2024. You still obviously want to cover some well-known things, you know, because at the end of the day, it's someone's opinion or experience, you know, with a particular product, computer, a game or anything like that. So I always want to say to people, tell me what you're into and why you like it and why I should, you know, like it as well. So we've covered things like little bits of technology, failed systems and things. But like one of the big things that got pitched to me, which I've been working on today, was a piece on this thing called the Connection Machine. So this issue will only go out right at the end of the year. But this was a pitch from this guy, John, and he goes, I've got this machine I want to write about called the Connection Machine by this company, Thinking Machines. It's a supercomputer. Now, I've said so many times, I'm not that technical at all. He goes, but I'm on good terms with this lady, Tomiko, and she designed it, you know. And I was like, okay, all right, well, start work on it and see how we get on. And it's turned into like an 8-page feature because the creator who came up with the idea, a guy called Danny Hillis, we sent it to him just to read over, and he fed back a few things to go, oh, you just need to change that little bit of history. It didn't quite go like this, this, that, and the other. And then there's another guy who was involved called Brewster Kahle, and he went on to found the Internet Archive. So I'm looking back at all these 1984, 85 pictures that Tomiko sent over, and she's given us permission to use. I'm just going, this is insane. You've got a guy called Richard Feynman, who was part of the Manhattan Project. And, you know, and I'm just going, this is mad. We've spoke to a guy, Carl Sims, who's also has won a Nobel Prize. And it's just, it's absolutely insane, the people involved. We're talking like really, really clever people, you know. And I'm going, okay, I knew nothing about this. Now I know quite a lot for reading, you know, quite a few thousand words. But I'm hoping people find it interesting, and that's obviously the difficult part. Because
it's great that you know, people's passion could take you down that kind of road.
Yeah. I mean, it really, really is. And what I always want is, if someone's reading Pixel Addict, I want them to learn something new, you know. And just for example, like with that one, you know, that Connection Machine. Oh, honest to God, my God, it's just. It's sort of like technology and art coming together, because it's been in like the New York Museum of Modern Art as well, and things like that as a showcase. It's just, it's been so interesting, you know. But then like it then opens the doors to, you know, get more people involved in the magazine, you know, to talk to us and stuff like that. You know, it's, I've even been speaking to started speaking to an MP about his computer collection, you know. So he goes, yeah, I'll answer some questions. I went, I won't discuss politics. We'll just keep it to game.
An MP answering questions.
I know. I said, we'll keep it fun. We'll talk about old computers, you know. But no, it's good. It really is. And I want people to have something they can hold. I know not everyone wants to own a physical product through space or whatever. And for me, it's all about the nostalgia of having a paper product in your hands.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you as well. I mean, you know, I get the PDFs because I subscribe to Pixel and Amiga Addict. I get the PDFs delivered to me, but I always wait till the proper actual mags arrive through the door just for that experience. And again, I mean, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I've seen your cover with James Pond on it for the Christmas edition of Amiga Addict with the snow over the logo.
Yeah.
And again, it reminds me of, you know, getting that Amiga format issue that we talked about 30 years ago. So well, it brings back those feelings.
That turned into a nice piece as well, because Phil South's done that. And Phil South was obviously on a lot of magazines back in the day, you know, like Yoss Sinclair and again Zero, and he's worked on Amiga magazines. So for me, it's a bit surreal when I'm going, yeah, Phil, can you just, you know, write us a piece on this or whatever, or what ideas have you got, you know? And then, you know, I've reached out to a couple of people with him, you know, to discuss that Millennium interactive piece with, you know, James Pond. And it's just, again, it opens up so many doors, you know, because you never know. Like, and again, it's like you sometimes catch people unaware, but you'll be aware of that. You get a guest in every single week for the last God knows how many years, you know, and they go, oh, why do you want to talk to me about this? You know, oh, it was 30 years ago. I can't remember, you know. But then I think when you start answering, you know, asking the questions, they go, oh, yeah. And that's why I love it. You know, I love it when you ask that question and it unlocks something in their mind, and you just go, yes, I've got it. I've got what I want.
Well, Paul, I mean, you know, you guys do it so well, you and all the guys at, you know, Addict Media. And I think it's incredible that you're keeping the magazine scene alive, and we can, you know, actually have paper magazines dedicated to our favourite systems. And long may it continue. I mean, I always love it when I see a copy of Amiga Addict or Pixel Addict in W.H. Smith. I always kind of move it to the front and, you know, do you guys a favour. But for people that maybe haven't seen it around, I mean, just to kind of wrap things up, what's the best way for people to get hold of them?
Again, if you just go on addict.media, that would take you to our site where you can obviously look at the two main magazines and also our one-off special on Amstrad Addict. And hopefully, you know, you might see a few more specials down the line. And again, you know, like you just mentioned, in W.H. Smith's there as well. And yeah, it's hard work, but it's worth it. It really, really is. Yeah.
Well, long may it continue, Paul, and it's been lots of fun reminiscing with you, and I look forward to the next retro event where we share a pint and I spend too much money on magazines after you
pass
them out to me.
I know. No, thank you so much for having me on. Look, I'm sorry for banging on about magazines too much, you know, and not letting you get too many words in, but it's a big passion. You know,
yeah, it's been a blast, mate. And obviously, Maximum Power Up is back. The podcast, check that out as well.
Yeah. Sorry, I will just quickly say that. So, I don't think we're going to do loads, but I think we're going to try and put out, you know, maybe 4, maybe 5 a year if we can. So, you know, no set schedule at the moment, but if the moment takes us just off the microphone and, you know, get talking, something that I don't struggle to do.
Fantastic. Well, Paul, always a pleasure to catch up with you, mate. Obviously, I'll put all the links in the show notes so people can click through as well. So thanks again for coming on.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.